Together again, you and I, on a Monday, December 5th, 2022, on Connecticut Today. We welcomed former Republican State Senate leader Len Fasano, who talked about a recent op-ed regarding the state Republican Party and Republicans' attachment still to Donald Trump in the state. Commuter advocate Jim Cameron dropped by to talk about possible Metro North fare increases and service cuts. And they also talked about the controversy surrounding new video cameras in at least one Bridgeport neighborhood. Great to have this gentleman back with us. He has co-written an op-ed, an editorial that appeared in the Hartford Courant on Saturday. John McKinney and Len Fasano say Republicans must reject Donald Trump as a candidate. Here's why. And good time to have Len Fasano with us, coming off what was our lead story there at the bottom of the hour, that Mr. Trump has had to backtrack comments again that he made, this time referring to the past election and the Constitution. Mr. Fasano, it's Paul here. How are you, Len? How you been?
Good, Paul. How you been? I'm doing well.
I'm living the dream. I'm living the dream, Len. You know that, right? Aren't we all, right?
I was about to say, aren't we all?
Yeah. So you got together with John, and I've had John on the show the last couple of weeks too, post-election here, and you wrote this op-ed. Why the desire, Len? Why the notion for you and John to co-author this and to put it in the Courant?
First of all, John and I became very good friends when he was leader and I was second to him, and we've maintained that relationship post-politics. And, you know, we were reading and reviewing the election, and we listened to what President Trump had come out and said, and we just feel that our feeling is that this country is so divided, and we need someone who is going to unite people together. We need a different sort of frame of reference, a different attitude. People are troubled with fear. They're troubled with anger. They have a lot of anxiety. You see it in elections. You see it in the economy. You see it in day-to-day. We need someone who's going to bring people together. In Washington, they're spending a lot of time finger-poking. They spend a lot of time having these hearings to discover who's doing what to get some political advantage. The sound bites get worse and worse on the news. Each one have to outdo the other. We need someone who's going to come in and say, let's put a stop to this. Let's get ourselves together. We are here to better the people of the United States. We're here to better this country. We're here to make it strong. We're here to unite it. And as good as the policies as President Trump has had, and he has, they've been overshadowed by his rhetoric. And you can't unite people that way. Whether it's Democrat or Republicans, he's sort of taking bipartisan fair shots at both. Lindsey Graham was protected for a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of months ago, said something, and Trump attacked Lindsey Graham. We just can't have that. We got to be able to have open dialogue, free to say what you want to say without name calling, and solve a problem. But our country is sort of in this ongoing political series, mini series of accusations and hearings and nothing about making lives stronger and better for Americans.
An op-ed in Saturday's Hartford Courant written by John McKinney and Len Fasano, two former Republican Senate leaders. Republicans must reject Donald Trump as a candidate, and here's why. Len Fasano joins us. You know, Len, it's I just said right before you came on, I have a monitor in here in the studio, so I bang around, you know, between the news channels, and I tend to watch MSNBC a lot because we can use the NBC audio here. We're licensed to that. And, you know, having Mr. Trump still be around, Len, and having so many people still attached to him, and I understand people can do what they want. You and I both get that. But it's like manna from heaven for Democrats, because I'm watching. And every other story, Len, literally on MSNBC is about Trump. So the more he talks, the more fuel, Len, he gives to the other side, not just to Republicans, but the Democrats must be high-fiving each other every day here.
Yes, I agree. And look, our leaders locally, Ben Candelaria and Kevin Kelly, leader of the House and leader of the Senate, respectively, the press goes up and says, Trump burped. What did you think about that? Trump did this. What do you think about that? And they've got to spend time sort of saying, look, you know, I can't answer for everything. Oh, so do you support him?
Yeah.
It's, you know, we have to get the business done in Connecticut. We got to get business done across this country. And we just can't. He was a novelty when he came out. His policies were good. But when he got in, he went too far. And he continues to do that. I don't know if it's to get attention. Who knows what's on his mind? I don't profess to know that. But what I do know is I think the midterm elections were not good for Republicans. I think that locally in the state of Connecticut, the elections were not good for Republicans. And before Donald, when Donald Trump got in, we were 18-18 in the state Senate.
Yeah.
And we did a budget that everything that people are working on, looking at now and saying we're going to keep. And a budget that's given us surpluses, a budget that's brought down our pension debt. And how did that happen? We were 18-18 and we had conversations. We didn't agree with each other 100%, but you know what? That budget is pretty darn good for Connecticut now and in the future. And that happened. And then what happened? We did a really good budget. This was an anti-Trump movement, particularly in the western part of Connecticut. We lost four seats. We lost four seats. That is the story of how Donald Trump can hurt Republicans. And I think this last election, although we lost a seat in the Senate, lost a seat in the House, I don't think that some of those seats that they thought they were going to pick up or at least stayed even and they didn't is related to the Donald Trump factor. And that's an issue for us.
Yeah, that's three straight cycles, Len, 2016, 2018, actually four. Well, the blowback started in 18. So 2018, 2020, and 22, where you got away from, again, that tie in the state Senate. And the state House, if I remember, Len, was the closest it was in years, and then that blowback. Now, you and I can sit here and argue all day, don't pay attention to Washington, do what's great for the state, but a lot of voters didn't see it that way.
No, they didn't. And a lot of the conversation at the Capitol was about, look, I respect the chair, whether it's Governor Lamont or Governor Malloy. When they were governor, we disagreed on policy, but I respected the chair. That's the governor's seat. You have to. If you want people to respect government, you have to respect the people in government when you're in government. Governor Malloy and Governor Lamont and I had policy issues, but that was the end of it. You know, when we're asked, do you think that Trump this and Trump that, you're trying to be respectful of a sitting president, and the press knew that, and they kept hitting that and taking our less than flattering comments, say, towards President Trump and blowing them out of proportion. That's what they were trying to do. They liked the divisiveness. The Democrats liked the divisiveness. And it was very difficult to have a methodical, well-thought-out, established message without being derailed by a Trump issue. That's very difficult.
No, Len, I can understand, and people don't know that you guys, much the way they happen in D.C., you guys and gals up there, there is a press corps that will, you know, bombard you every day and ask you this stuff. Len Fasano was the guest. He and John McKinney co-wrote, co-authored, Republicans Must Reject Donald Trump as a Candidate, and here's why. And yet, Len, I got to tell you, with all due respect, I'll go home tonight, and I'll see it in my social media feeds and everything, and you probably hear it, too. It's nothing you haven't heard. You had that rhino Fasano on today. What good is he? So we're really, I mean, you can't even, we're at a point now where we're losing our collective minds. We can't even say, well, maybe somebody is right on something because, man, Len, if you don't pass that litmus test, forget it. Nobody wants to talk to you.
Look, I got to tell you, social media is a bad thing. I'm going to say something, get me in trouble, but I don't really care because I'm not politics. I can say whatever I want now.
Right?
But I think a lot of people who do the social media are just cowards. You know, they won't have the conversation with you. They don't have any foundation to make comments, but they just write comments, mostly because they have hatred in their heart. And they just write these comments down to be mean. So I never paid much attention to social media when I was leader. I don't have a Facebook account. I don't have any of that stuff. Because I don't care. I'm going to say what I believe in. I can defend what I believe in. And that's it. You have a right to disagree. That's what life's about. And that's okay. But to say that well, you know, lens rhino. The question is, you know, if you keep on attacking ourselves and we eat our own, which is what the Republican Party tends to do, how are you going to grow the numbers? And if you sit there and say, you know, I'm not voting for that Republican because he doesn't hold every single value, 8, 1 through 10.
Yeah.
Maybe has 7 of them, but not all 10. I'm not going to support them. Then they're shocked when we have a super minority in the Senate that allows them to waive the rules and do everything else. You can't be shocked over that fact because you're the cause of that fact. So, you know, one thing is, you know, talk about open primaries so that we can bring some moderation into our party. We may have to talk about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
In my view.
Yeah, and Len, finally, you know, people, and again, I like a lot of these people, they're friends, they're listeners, they say, well, you know, conservatism, and I ask them a simple question, Len, and you and I are about the same age, so we know, look at all the Republicans that have been elected in this state recently, not a lot of them, but look at them, Nancy Johnson, Lowell Weicker, John Rowland, whom I met, well, Stuart McKinney, John's late dad, you know, people like that, Rob Simmons, you know, Christopher Chase. None of these Republicans, John, in Connecticut were far right Republicans. None of them were.
No. No. And look, I think Republicans have got the best message. And our message is self-determination, the right to exceed, to grab hold of the American dream, to give everybody the opportunity to be the best that they can be. We'll give them a helping hand to get out of wherever they are. We'll protect the social services. We'll get people out of poverty. We'll get jobs to our cities. That's a real good Republican message. We don't do a good enough job selling that message. I would argue in Connecticut that the message is the opposite. The Democrats and the system that they have set up, you trap people in poverty. If you make X number of dollars, we'll give you some help for child care, health insurance. You make $1 over that, we're going to drop you like a bad habit. So they can't, people can't excel. They can't get ahead in life because if they make $1 over that, they can't afford the health care. So they got to make a decision. Do I take the promotion or do I lose my health care? Not the decision that Republicans believe you need to make. We believe you can do it both ways. As people make their way out of poverty and make their way through life, we can reduce by a mathematical formula a certain percentage of what they get from the state. So they still end up ahead. So this willingness to succeed, because people should not be measured by the check that they get from government. They should be measured by the dreams and aspirations that they want to have. That's how we do it for Republicans. That's our message. All the rest of it we could work out. We stick to our message, which is bringing hope where there's despair, allowing people the opportunity to reach the American dream. And we could do it, and we could do it in our cities. But we have to go into our cities and explain this philosophy. And it is a fiscally prudent philosophy that has a great social positive impact.
On that note, we say thank you, Len Fasano. Len, good to speak with you. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. There you go, folks. Check it out. John McKinney and Len Fasano. Republicans must reject Donald Trump as a candidate, and here's why. We haven't talked to this gentleman in a while, so now is a good time. He writes the Talking Transportation column in the Connecticut Mirror and other spots, and he's also going to be hosting a Zoom lecture, a Zoom get-together from the Wilton Library. That comes up tomorrow, and Jim Cameron is the guest right here on WICC. Jim, good afternoon. Been a while. How are you?
Oh, Paul, I'm just fine. How are you?
Good, good, Jim. Living the dream. Still living the dream. What can I tell you? Aren't we all? Jim, before we talk about the you know, what's in the future here in Metro North, let's tell people about what is going on emanating from the Wilton Library tomorrow, hosted by you, and how can people sign up? What do you got?
Well, I've been doing this lecture across the state, you know, talking about the future of transportation in the post-COVID era. And this is the last chance, the last version of this. It's been constantly updated. So I'm going to be talking about what's the future with fares and timetables and schedules, and is there going to be more or less traffic and our tolls back on the horizon. It's going to be a Zoom talk. Just go to the wiltonlibrary.org site and you'll find it under events. 7 o'clock. It's free, but you got to register.
That's free. That's the best kind, Jim. No, so what you're saying is you did not hook up with Live Nation or Ticketmaster for tickets with this. There will be no secondary market for this.
No, iHeart Media has not had its fingers in this pie.
All right, so folks, it's a long website, but like Jim said, long address here. Just go to the Wilton Library website. It's tomorrow, Tuesday, December 6th at 7 p.m., Zoom lecture and Q&A hosted by the Wilton Library as to what is coming up. Jim Cameron, our commuter expert, he's been that in Greater Connecticut for years. His latest column, talking transportation in the Connecticut Mirror and other spots as well. Metro North fare increases are coming. Jim, where did you find that out and what have you been told?
Well, this is not that daring a prediction if you if you follow Metro North's progress over the years. I mean, they have fare increases on a regular basis. Here's the story. Metro North is part of the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, which controls all the subways and the buses, the Long Island Railroad, et cetera, in New York City. Mm-hmm. MTA sets fares on those trains in New York City and New York State. They do not set fares in Connecticut. Having said that, there is a long tradition every time they raise fares that Connecticut follows suit. And the Connecticut DOT controls fares in Connecticut. Subway fares in New York City are expected to climb higher than $3 by 2025. That's about a 5.5% bump. And there's every expectation that the commuter rail fares will follow.
Mm-hmm.
Why the fare increase? Because the ridership is not coming back. The MTA has blown through billions of dollars that were given to it by the federal government to tide it over during COVID, and they're running out of money before they have new revenue sources and long before they had hoped and were promised by consultant McKinsey that ridership would be back. Ridership on Metro North has flatlined at about 70% of pre-COVID levels. No indication it's going to get any higher. Yeah, people are being enticed back to the office, but in many cases, that does not mean they have to go into Midtown Manhattan, because a lot of New York City-based companies have opened satellite offices in the burbs up here in Fairfield County. So if the ridership's not coming back, there's every expectation that they're going to have to raise fares or reduce service, and nobody wants to see fewer trains right now.
So, yeah, I was going to ask you that. So there just aren't as many people, Jim, and I kind of thought this would happen. The butts are not in the seats, as we say in transportation and sports and theaters. There's just not enough people taking this thing all the way in to Midtown Manhattan there at 47 and Lexington, 42nd and Lex, as there were pre-COVID.
That's right. And you know, remember that even pre-COVID, when it was standing room only on the rush hour trains, every ticket was subsidized. And they were losing money with over capacity ridership. Every ticket on Metro North pre-COVID was subsidized by more than $3.
Wow.
On the branch lines, as much as in the case of Shoreline East, which is the line from New Haven to New London, those tickets were subsidized $50 per ticket per passenger. Now, if the ridership has gone down, those subsidies have gone up, and someone's got to pay that bill. There is no free lunch, and there is no hope that with a Republican-controlled Congress that they're going to be, you know, dishing up more money to subsidize mass transit systems in predominantly Democrat-controlled Northeast states like Connecticut. So something's got to go. They've either got to raise fares, cut service, or lay off employees. They promised they would not lay off employees, so I think they've already been hinting that they're going to raise fares. And every expectation that's going to continue across the border into Connecticut.
Talking transportation with Jim Cameron here. His latest column, Metro North fare increase is coming. So let me lob the first batting practice fastball at you, James. What are we talking about? Let's say, Jim, the staffing and service levels stay the same. So a year from now, a year and a half, 2 years from now, is a single ticket or a round trip into and out of, say, from New Haven or Fairfield County into Grand Central, is that a buck more expensive, $2, $5? Do we have any idea?
Well, it depends on how much it costs now. I think that a 5% fare increase would certainly be in line with A, inflation, and B, with whatever the MTA is doing with subway fares in New York City. Everything is going to be costing a little bit more. And the worry that everybody in transportation has is if you either cut service, reduce the number of trains, or you raise the fares, is that going to discourage ridership even more? You know, if the fares are a little more expensive, will that be an excuse for people to say, hey, I know the traffic's bad on 995 and the Merritt Parkway, but I want to save a couple bucks, so I'm going to drive it a bit. And if ridership goes down, then the revenue goes down again. And now you're in a death spiral of, you know, what happened to passenger rail service when it was still being run by private railroads. They did everything they could to get people off of the trains. We're trying, I think the policy is still to encourage use of mass transit. So we've got to keep the fares affordable, but we got to keep them, you know, realistic, because I don't think there's a political appetite in Hartford, especially in areas not served by Metro North. I can see people upstate going, why am I subsidizing Fat Cat, the millionaire riders out of Fairfield County for their ride into the city to go see shows on Broadway?
That's what I've always, Jim, I've always called that, you know, when it comes to Metro North, especially when I was working at a station in Hartford, I would say, folks, be careful of down there-ism. Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, those people in Wilton want to go see The Lion King. Nobody in Farmington cares, right?
Well, but by the same token, why do I, as a taxpayer in Fairfield County, pay for a football stadium
in East Hartford?
I'm never going to use. You know, and to a certain extent, we're part of a state. Okay, let's remember also that something like 40% of all the taxes in this state are paid by residents in Fairfield County.
Yes,
we're subsidizing the rest of the state.
And part of the reason they do that, Jim, is they can live up here and they can escape New York taxes. And part of the reason they do that, bing, 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 is Metro North.
Exactly. If Metro North service deteriorates and people really have to get to their jobs in New York City, will they leave Fairfield County? Will they, you know, they move back into the city? The city is pretty cool. It's a, you know, hip place to live, and a lot of empty nesters are moving back in for all the culture and things like that. So it's a tough situation. But I'm just trying to, you know, I 2 years ago, in my crystal ball, I predicted exactly what's happening now. Ridership is not coming back. Now, there are some things that could be done by the railroad to improve ridership. The things that I hear most from commuters are the trains are still too low.
Yep.
Slow, I should say. And I don't feel safe once I get off the train in Grand Central and I get on the subway. There are a lot of crazy people on the subway out there. And if I don't feel safe taking the subway, what am I going to do? Walk from Grand Central to Wall Street? I don't think so.
No.
And one other thing.
Sure.
I know you got a break coming up. But one other thing that I discovered in my research. The MTA is losing $500 million a year to fare evaders. People who are not paying the subway fare or the bus fare.
Turnstile hoppers. They're hopping turnstiles.
$1 billion. $500 million. And they are going so far as to now place armed guards at some train stations. Now, what's going to happen when some, you know, armed guard, these are not city cops, some armed guard for the MTA gets provoked and shoots a fare evader? What's that going to mean to the ridership on the subways?
Jim, final question for you. I know that Governor Lamont had said, you know, being a Fairfield County guy, he said, hey, the guys and gals that I know, like you said, it takes too long to get in. And the governor had talked about maybe twisting the MTA a little to make more express runs, especially in morning and afternoon. Put more trains out there. Cut the what he wanted. He wanted, what, a 30 or 45 minute?
Yeah.
What's happening with that?
Oh, that's
fantasy.
I don't know what the governor is smoking now that it's legal, or what he was smoking when he announced that. But,
okay.
Yeah, he wanted to do a plan with 30-minute rides from New Haven to Stamford, 30 minutes from Stamford to Grand Central.
Mm-hmm.
Each of those runs is pretty close to an hour right now.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, he did get his outgoing DOT commissioner, Giulietti, to add two or three express trains from New Haven early in the morning. I think they leave at 5:30.
There you go.
and they make one stop at Bridgeport, maybe at Stamford, and they zoom into New York City. And I think they make it in just over an hour. But that doesn't help the guy who's, you know, commuting locally out of Bridgeport or Fairfield or New Canaan. Those trains are slower than they were 5 years ago, and there are no signs of it getting any faster right now.
Yeah. Jim Cameron, Jim, thank you. Metro North fare increases coming. That is Jim's latest column, Connecticut Mirror. And check out the Wilton Library website to register for Jim's Zoom presentation tomorrow. Jim, be good. Happy holidays, and we'll talk, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Be well.
So, you know, I'm guessing either people are serious about wanting crime-free streets and serious about wanting criminals and gangbangers and thugs and scumbags off the streets, or they're not. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, you know, yeah, I'm for public safety, but no. No. Sorry, that doesn't work. You can't play this halfway. You can't say, well, yeah, I want the safe streets, and I want the ne'er-do-wells, you know, to be looking over their shoulders. You can't say that and say, but, right? You're either for it or against it. You're either for efforts to stop violence in streets like Bridgeport and Hartford and New Haven and Waterbury and Stamford, New London and all that, and Meriden and Hartford, or you're not. What am I talking about? Well, it's an interesting story today in the Connecticut Post, Hearst Connecticut Media. And by the way, it's Connecticut Today. Hi. There is what's called, and I saw one of these last week. Not in Bridgeport, but you know by now I live in Wallingford. And a couple of weeks ago I pulled into, and a lot of you folks may know where this is, the Stop and Shop Plaza way up on Route 5 in Wallingford, 900 block of Route 5 in Wallingford. And I saw this thing, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, what is this? And it was in the parking lot. And it was white, as this one is in Bridgeport. You can check out the picture at ctpost.com. It was white. It has a solar panel on it. So I said, there's no power line running to it. So this thing charges itself during the days. It's a solar panel charging batteries in it. So it's designed to work 24/7. So I looked up the pole up there and I said, those little dark black domes there, those are surveillance cameras. And I said, interesting. So either, and I don't know what the deal was in Wallingford at the Stop and Shop, I have no idea. But I said, that's interesting. So I said, they've probably brought this in. In fact, they definitely have brought this in, I guess, which is why they did it. I said, well, they probably brought this in because they either want to be proactive about people getting attacked and carjacked and mugged by the dirtbags in society, or maybe it's for parking lot accidents, whatever. But let's hope they're being proactive and rather than reactive. And you look up and it's got the four domed security cameras on it. And I'm sure they can remotely, or maybe when they set it up, they, you know, angle all four or five of those cameras. So it gets a good breadth, a good look at the entire parking lot. And I say, this is good. You know, a lot of times cops can solve crimes through video, or even insurance companies may request video if somebody is making a claim against someone about a parking lot accident or something like that. So I said, okay, this is good. I should probably, you know, button my shirt and comb my hair and look spiffy, wave to the camera. Hey, how's that? Well, one of these is now in downtown Bridgeport, apparently. And it's got some people disturbed, a little wary. The headline of the story is, police surveillance camera in Bridgeport draws mixed reaction. Now, the minute you read that, if you're like me, the minute you read that, you're like, well, who? What kind of mixed reaction could that be? Last time I checked, Bridgeport is not, you know, it's not Mayberry, okay? You know, Andy and Opie ain't down the fishing hole. You know, the barber shop ain't open there to get a cut, you know? Aunt B ain't pulling a pie out of the oven, if you know what I mean. So this is interesting. There, it's in Baldwin Plaza, right downtown, just outside the Main Street Courthouse here, says, which it's been met with mixed reactions by business owners in the neighborhood, with some saying it makes the area safer, others say it creates a bad perception. Really? A bad perception of what? It creates a bad perception. Okay. Really? It points out here in the story, as I noticed in the one in Wallingford, in my Stop and Shop Plaza there, it's got a solar panel and flashing blue light. And the strobe is kind of, and I'll bet you that strobe is there. So people do notice it. And they say, oh, what's that? It's a camera there, huh? Oh, is that what that is, huh? Huh. Really? Maybe they want you to notice it. You ever think of that, Einstein? A pole protrudes skyward from it with four dome security cameras on top. The unit's wheels allow the Bridgeport Police Department to move it easily to other parts of the city. That's according to Scott Appleby, Bridgeport's Emergency Management Director, who's been on this show numerous times. Appleby saying it's, among other units, deployed as a proactive way to reduce crime and property damage. Good. In other words, the thugs, the gangbangers, the dirtbags of society, they look up and, you know, maybe it doesn't make them angels. It doesn't rehabilitate them, but maybe they think twice. By the way, it says here in the story, the unit's located near the site of a triple shooting that occurred less than 2 months ago. So for all you people that don't like it down there, it's there because it was a triple shooting. This is not hard to understand. Paul Brown is opening the In the City Tapas Lounge directly behind it. He says it wasn't there before the shooting. Well, yeah. So it's there now after the shooting. Because apparently the cops in the city are worried about more shootings in that area. And maybe this will deter them. And maybe, unfortunately, if something like this happens, there will be some video evidence that police can use. Gentleman here named Paul Brown also owns the Grill 2 Jamaican restaurant downtown Bridgeport, said the shooting delayed the opening of his planned tapas lounge that month. New York City-based entertainers, including DJs and a live band, pulled out of a grand opening event for the lounge, which is now set to open on December 17th, so good luck to him. They heard about the shooting. It was in the news. Blah, blah, blah. Brown worries, though, that the unit will continue to scare people away from the area. He feels that similar police equipment is typically associated with dangerous neighborhoods. So I think you have a, I guess you have a chicken or the egg thing here, right? Don't you? Brown admits, though, his restaurant was broken into twice in less than a month during the fall. After complaining to police, he noticed more patrol cars in the area and felt secure. Another person here, Lynn Mosier-Howell, who runs a Rafa massage about a block away from the shooting, she agrees, says here, that the unit could lead to a perception that the area is dangerous. But she says safer down. She feels the area is safer downtown with the increased surveillance. I don't quite understand how some people, and apparently these folks have experienced crime, you know, firsthand here. But I'm kind of interested here in the fact that some people. I mean, you can't have it both ways. You can't. Now, maybe they are upset with the way things look because it's mobile, because it's a mobile camera setup that can be moved. It has wheels. It's not hardwired. It has a solar panel. It does have that flashing strobe that you can't miss. The one I saw in my town, I looked up and I said, well, what is that? Oh, it's security cameras. Has to be. Well, isn't that the point? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So some mixed reaction. And did you wonder what this is when you were traveling in downtown Bridgeport? Right in the Fairfield Avenue area in downtown. Did you see it there and wonder what it is? Do you have any problem with this sort of a setup? I mean, it's there, obviously, because of, you know, things that have happened in the area. It's got to be rough for business owners. I get that. I understand that. But remember, there are court cases that have said in the past that you have no reasonable right to privacy when you're outside of your own home. There were early court challenges to things like Google Maps. Well, they're taking pictures of me outside. Well, that's because you're outside. So what do you think of that whole thing? 203-333-9422. Is it a little much to put these mobile surveillance cameras in the downtown Bridgeport areas, or are they warranted?